¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Marina Lacerda is a survivor and mother from Brazil. In her youth, she emigrated to New York with her mother in hopes of forging a new life. Almost immediately, Marina would begin to face sexual and physical violence that normalized a long cycle of abuse. By the time she was 14, Marina would be introduced to Jeffrey Epstein, a man that seemed to symbolize success and wealth, but only added to her trauma. Eventually, Marina would play a part in both of the FBI's attempts at prosecuting Epstein in 2008 and 2019, when during the latter, she would be dubbed Minor Victim 1. Marina's journey is a testament to the impact of the cycle of abuse, but it's also a testament to her personal resilience and strength. The Broken Cycle Media team is incredibly honored she was willing to share her story with our audience, and that she continues to be transparent about her healing journey in the name of advocacy.
When I was 15 and a half, my stepfather moved back home, so I moved out at 16. By the time I was 17, I had moved in with a boyfriend of mine who at the time didn't need to move out of his house, but he was so upset that my mom did that he was like, I'm moving you out of the house. And it so happened that we found an apartment across the street from my original home where I lived with my mom. But then we moved on to another place. My boyfriend and I, we had broken up. We were so young. He had cheated on me and I was living by myself. I was doing sometimes 2 to 3 different jobs in one workplace. So I was very tired. I no longer was the fun Marina that Jeffrey Epstein would use me as. He just got tired of me. He told me personally, he was like, you're getting old. I was like, holy crap, I have to pay rent. My rent was $1,350 at the time. I had bills to pay. I was more focused on how to survive. And I no longer had Jeffrey Epstein. So I really needed to make the best out of the job that I had. My first encounter with the FBI was in 2008. It was close to my birthday. So I was turning 19. It was such a mess. They knocked on my door and they were like, this is the FBI. We need to talk to you. And I was like, about what? And they're like, we need to talk to you about Jeffrey Epstein. And I was like, nope, nope, nope. And I closed the door and the FBI agent put her foot at the door and she was like, you're going to talk to us whether you like it or not. And she dropped her card and she's like, and you better call us fast. So that definitely wasn't the best approach. They were so aggressive in 2008. They definitely treated me like I was a perpetrator. We have brought up to their attention numerous of times that in cases like this, you cannot have an FBI agent knock on a victim or a survivor's door because their approach is completely different than what it should be. And it's not their fault. It's because they're dealing with real criminals every day. And when they come to us, they're coming at us like we are criminals. And that kind of shuts us down. That would shut anybody down. It's scary. They had told me to stay away from the internet and looking for things. I really didn't go in fishing for Jeffrey Epstein, what was going on in Florida, because they probably knew that if I had looked into it, that he had done this to other girls, then I would have understood. I'm thinking I'm the only person in my group of friends bringing him girls after girls after girls. So I'm like, this only has to do with me, myself, and this group of girls. Not knowing there's like hundreds of women that were getting abused and children. I had called Jeffrey Epstein up right after the FBI left my house. I called his secretary. I didn't have his landline where I could reach him directly or his cell phone at the time. He calls me back and I'm like, Jeffrey, what the hell is going on? I have the FBI in my door asking me questions about you. So I was very confused. I was like, what the hell is going on? The FBI is here. This is insane. And he said, listen, don't call me. Don't call the office. And I said to him, I'm going to end up telling them everything that I know because I can't be in trouble with the law. I've never been in trouble with the law. Not even the police, let alone the FBI. I'm like, this is serious. This is like some movie shit. He says to me, don't call me. I will have a lawyer reach out to you. The lawyer did reach out to me. I went to the lawyer. They got me scared. They were like, you can get in big trouble for this. This is trafficking. And I'm like, I didn't know I was trafficking women. I really thought I was helping some of my friends out that were also wanting to make money. I didn't force anybody to go there. It's not like I lied to any of the girls and said, hey, listen, let's go there because we're going to go eat in his house. And then things happen. I was always very honest with everybody. I'm pretty sure some of them have now turned around and have regret that they have done that in their life. But at the time, they needed it. And none of them that I encountered or ever been like, I'm mad at you and I don't want to talk to you and you fucked up my life. They've never said that to me. From that point on, after I spoke to the lawyers and then I got subpoena, I was supposed to fly out to Florida. A day or 2 days before I was supposed to fly out, they called me up. They're like, you don't have to worry about nothing. This is going to go away. I did not ask any questions. I was very scared. I didn't want to have to go to court and testify against Jeffrey Epstein. I think I might have been the only minor in New York they had come across from what I'm understanding, and I could be wrong. He definitely didn't want me on stand. He would have done some time because it would have connected a lot of dots and a lot of things that he was doing in New York. He took the sweetheart deal.
It is widely reported that in 2008, Epstein avoided federal charges by pleading guilty to Florida state charges of solicitation of a prostitute and procuring a person under 18 for prostitution. Epstein was sentenced to 18 months in jail, but only served 13 months of his sentence. It's alleged that during his time in jail, he was allowed to leave the facility 6 out of 7 days a week for up to 12 hours at a time. During this time, he was allowed to go to an office he set up, where he claimed he was conducting work for a foundation he had created.
I don't understand how you get charged with soliciting a prostitute under the age of 18. That confuses me, because if you're under the age of 18, do you really know what prostitution is? There's something going on in her home. So instead of investigating only the predator, they should have investigated the fact that she was out there trying to make money. For what reason? There's something going on, and they just let us up. I don't know why they gave this man work release. And we come to find out today, he was not working. He was raping and abusing women while there were FBI agents waiting for him. He always made sure to know that he had a lot of power. I mean, just the people that he spoke on the phone with. We were young, but we were not dumb to not realize that this man had power and connections. Until 2019, I didn't think about Jeffrey Epstein. I met my husband at 21. I got married. I had a daughter. So really from 21 until 2019, which I think I was 29, I did not think about Jeffrey Epstein. I really didn't. I was focused on other things. Here I am again in the same situation. They knock on my door. I'm not home. I'm in the supermarket. The FBI comes. My mom was living with me at the time. My daughter was living with me. Me and my ex-husband had separated, so he was not living with me. My mom calls me and says, hey, the police are at the door. They're looking for you. I said, the police are at the door? How is that possible? She described they were in regular clothes. And I said, well, that does not sound like the police. So I knew it was something deeper than that. And at the time, my mom kept asking me, like, what did you do wrong? And I'm like, I did absolutely nothing wrong. The only thing I had done wrong was register my car in Jersey, and I lived in New York. And I was like, great. I wanted to save money. I'm going to jail because of fraud. I come back home. I didn't even shop for the right things in the supermarket. My head was in another world. When I come home, they knock on the door and they're like, are you Marina Lacerda? And I said, yes, I am. They're like, well, we want to talk to you about Jeffrey Epstein. Do you have some time? And I was like, sure, come in. So they come in and they're like, when did you first meet Epstein? And I looked at both FBI agents and I said, this is definitely not the right time to talk about it and definitely not the right place. My daughter and my mother is upstairs and I'm so confused why we're even talking about Jeffrey Epstein. I didn't even know what happened to Jeffrey Epstein. I've never looked him up. I never Googled him. I never had any interest of knowing anything about him because I already knew he was trouble. This is like more than 11 years ago. This is such a long time. They were able to tell me what my rights were with a lawyer and all that. And I had to seek help to have somebody make me understand what my rights were as a victim and not a perpetrator, what they were trying to do in 2008. In 2008, they looked at me as a perpetrator and they were so aggressive. Looking back and looking at my files, they did not have me as minor victim one. The FBI in 2019, they softened up to the survivors. But when I was doing my depositions and all these statements, I had no time to breathe. I had no time to be with my lawyer in 101. They had asked me questions that had nothing to do with the case, nothing with Jeffrey Epstein. They put me in a very vulnerable place. I had gotten back with my ex because I was so scared of everything. I was scared my daughter was going to get taken away from me. I was scared I was going to go to jail. I didn't know what was going to happen to me. Nobody was comforting. The FBI wasn't comforting. I'm like, hey, listen, don't worry. Anything you do tell us, you're not in trouble. You were a young girl. So it was very difficult to do all those depositions. And then sometimes I look at how much time I spent on those depositions and I can't even find them when these files are dumped. I'm like, where are my depositions? Where's all the statements and all the stuff that the FBI was taking? So when I look at it, I'm like, wow, what a waste of fucking energy these fucking people took from me. And it's not their fault, but holy shit, you guys drained my energy. I'm still trying to figure out why I was minor victim one, because there were a lot of minor victims in New York, and I think younger than me. So I'm really not the youngest one. They never told me in 2019. I literally found out in September I was minor victim one. As I was writing my speech down, somebody was helping me. I was like, hey, listen, don't forget to mention that you are minor victim one. And I'm like, minor victim one. And when I did at the time, I didn't think anything of it. And I really didn't think anything of it until I started to read my files that were unredacted, why I was minor victim one. Some people say, oh, because you were the youngest victim they found in New York. And I'm like, I get it, but why the first one? And now I know why. It's because if I would have went on stand, he would have been done. It would have opened up so many doors to other minor victims. And he knew he had to take that plea deal. I don't have much pride to say I'm minor victim one. I went through a lot in 2019. I had to stay away from the news. I had to stay away from the internet. I couldn't watch this. I couldn't watch that. So really wasn't paying attention to anything. It could damage my case. My lawyer calls me up. She says, hey, I don't know if you've heard, but I got some pretty bad news. And I'm like, fuck, man, I'm going to jail. Every phone call that I got, if I heard her voice, I was like, yep, this is it. I'm going to jail. She's like, Jeffrey Epstein just died in a cell. It was like a moment of silence. I was like, he died? She was like, from what we're understanding. They're still investigating, but it seems like he took his life.
Jeffrey Epstein was arrested on July 6, 2019, for charges that include one count of sex trafficking of minors and one count of conspiracy to commit sex trafficking of minors. But nearly 1 month later, on August 10, 2019, Jeffrey Epstein was found dead in his cell in New York City's Metropolitan Correctional Facility, where he was being held while he awaited trial. A BBC article reports that in a meeting with a psychologist on or around July 24th, Epstein said that he had, quote, no interest in killing myself, end quote, and that it would be crazy to take his own life. The same BBC article reports that on the night of August 9th, 2019, in the hours preceding Epstein's death, prison documents show that, quote, the prison guards failed to conduct checks scheduled for 3 and 5 o'clock, and the camera system in the unit was also down, end quote. Still, the New York City Medical Examiner and the Justice Department Inspector General officially ruled Jeffrey Epstein's death a suicide by hanging.
Jeffrey Epstein, whatever happened to him, we don't know if he killed himself or if he's still alive or somebody killed him. There's so many theories on that. It's just news for me that is great. I did not want to go and testify. I had no choice. I need to answer to these questions. I can't run away from this forever. I was actually very happy. There are some survivors that I have spoken to, and they are devastated that he passed away because they didn't get to see the justice that they wanted, that day that they've been waiting for in court. I just found it easier to be that way because once we look at it today and we see how much the justice system is failing us, can you imagine this man being alive? They would have been mad to see how much time he got. He had so many lawyers. He had so much good resources. He knew so many people. I mean, look what we're finding out today. He would have probably done maybe a little bit longer than P. Diddy, and maybe not. So I'm sorry to say, I'm happy Epstein is dead. If Jeffrey Epstein was alive, he'd be walking out as a free man. At least it's coming to light. But think about if he was still alive. He'd probably be trying to put us in jail or sue us. I feel like everything happens for a reason. I don't think we would have had all these files and all these politicians and powerful men being brought to light today. I think it would have been under the rock and we would have never found out. I think after this last files were released, people are really ranting about how the other half of the files are not released. And I get it. That is very important. But we also need to understand how many things the DOJ has done to silence us. They decided not only not redact our names, but they let out nude pictures of victims. They really were like, here, you want the files? We don't give a shit. We're just gonna fucking release them the way it is. And oh, by the way, we did redact some names, and some of those names are actually the perpetrators' names, because those are the important people that we want to protect. And the people that are out there that are telling their stories, which are us, they don't protect us sometimes. They're going against us. I read some of my comments and they're like, well, the money was good back then when Jeffrey Epstein was around, or did you pay taxes on it? It's such crazy remarks. And I'm like, who writes this shit? And a lot of times I want to write back, like, what if this was your sister? What if this was your daughter? What if this was your son? Let's wake the fuck up, guys. When these files got dumped, there were pages that were put up because they were so careless. But what I see that the media is holding back on is those pages that was put on the DOJ and then brought down. Why aren't we talking about it more? Some of us survivors are talking about some pretty horrific allegations. I don't even want to go into details, but if you go into the internet, you will see it everywhere.
As PBS reports, quote, at least 16 files disappeared from the Justice Department's public webpage for documents related to Jeffrey Epstein, including a photograph showing President Donald Trump, end quote. The article goes on to explain that the files disappeared from the website less than a day after they were posted, with no explanation from the government and no notice to the public. The missing files were available Friday, December 19th, and no longer accessible by Saturday, December 20th, 2025. The PBS article, which is linked in the episode notes, along with all other articles cited in this episode, states that, quote, "The files included images of paintings depicting nude women and one showing a series of photographs along a credenza and in drawers. In that image, inside a drawer, among other photos, was a photograph of Trump alongside Epstein, Melania Trump, and Epstein's longtime associate, Ghislaine Maxwell," end quote.
At one point, I read Jeffrey Epstein would bring in some girls that were called a calendar party, sticking his finger in their private area to measure their tightness. And then the men would pick the children they want. That one alone, I was heartbroken. I was speechless. It took me 2 days to get over that. I thought my abuse was bad. Why aren't we talking about it more? Why are we not pursuing the fact that we need to open an investigation on our president? These are serious allegations. This should be concerning every American person. I don't even know how many allegations it was. They're by different girls, by different women now. So all of them are lying. We need to have this topic always being talked about. We need to put pressure on the DOJ.
For all those versions of yourself and all the other victims and survivors, what would you change about that system to better support victims in the future?
That's a very good question. And I think that's something that it needs to be really researched. It goes back to me saying, when those charges were brought to Jeffrey Epstein of soliciting an underage minor prostitute, that's where it should start right there. We need to talk about why are we not questioning these girls, why they are doing this. I think the police is so worried about catching the perpetrator and who did this and how did they do it that they forget the most important part. There's a victim here. That's where we come in and try to help out. When we think of minors, we need to turn around and investigate the family. People need to investigate much deeper. They can't just come into a home and they see a facade of a happy home and a happy family and everything is so organized and everything looks clean. That doesn't mean shit. Is this child receiving psychological help? Does she have a therapist? What is going on with that case? Where's the family in this? Where's your responsibility here of your child? Why are you letting her or him run around and bring home a new pair of jeans? And next thing you know, they got some headphones. We need to start questioning the parents of these minors. And we need to investigate where are the parents? Because sometimes some of these parents are not even in the country. So you got children here sometimes by themselves, 14, 15 years old, living in a home, renting a room, making money and sending it back home. I think the big question here is, what is the justice system doing to the minors that they find that have been put in this vulnerable state where they have to go out of their way and do these things? And how can we make it better?
What have you leaned on the most in getting through all of this? And what has been the tools or resources that have been most healing for you?
The most healing resource to me has definitely been talking on platforms like this, including the listeners, including the people that follow me on my platform, including people like you who take the time to really get to know my story and not just about Jeffrey Epstein. This is what really keeps me going. If I get a message on my Instagram saying, "Hey, you're a Shiro, you've made me walk out of my marriage." When I hear that, if I hear it from one person, I know I'm making a change, and this is what keeps me going. Yes, I do yoga. I do exercise. I do walk outside and put my foot on the grass. I do love to listen to music every night while I cook. I do have a glass of wine. All of it together makes it part of my therapy, as my recovery, as my healing. Sometimes I feel like when I talk at different platforms, I'm so open and honest. I feel like anybody that's listening is not going to judge me. And if they are, it doesn't bother me anymore. Because at the end of the day, it's what I always say. You need to protect your peace. And if I'm happy and I want to share my story and I want to say what I want to say, it makes me happy. I can live my life knowing not to have to look back and say, oh, wow, I never said this. Oh, wow, I didn't do this. This is what makes me go and move forward in life every day. I like to share because I feel like everything that happens in life, it becomes a cycle. And then you have to be strong enough to step back and look at this story that you're creating of your life and say, is this a story that I want for this life? And I also always like to shine a light on saying that there is life after abuse. So please keep that in mind. Life does go on, guys. Take this horrible experience and flip it around into something positive. Follow me on my platform. It is Marina Lacerda for Survivors. I have some great content in there.
Thank you so much for all of your time and energy and your incredible transparency and your advocacy too. I appreciate you.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real, real pleasure. And it was so great speaking to you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
One of the girls that I was there with, she asked me if I wanted to meet one of her friends. We got in a boat and we headed over to Jeffrey Epstein's island. He walked up and he said, hello. He gave me a kiss on my cheek and he sat down next to me. I had never met an older man before that paid that much attention to me. I remember feeling really comfortable with him. And at one point I told him that I grew up my first few years in England. And he said, oh, do you want to meet a prince?
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.